I'm Whitefeather Hunter. Hunter is my last name. I am a bioartist, a witch, and an academic researcher. I'm currently working on my PhD as a doctoral fellow at the University of Western Australia. However, I've been stranded back in Canada for almost 2 years now, thanks to COVID, and yeah, attempting to continue my research in whatever ways I can, although I don't have lab access right now.
So you mentioned that you're a witch. So on your website, you say that you work in performance. That's a term many of us understand. So is craft-based work part of your witch practice? And could you explain how that comes across in your work?
Yeah. So both the performance and the craft are sort of intersected with the witchcraft practice. I have a background in textiles as a textile artist, and my textile work has often, other than the obvious connections to witchcraft, such as weaving and spinning and, you know, fate, I often like to include the performance of craft or the activity of, you know, constructing things with craft methodologies as a sort of ritual practice. And often my performances are not for a live audience unless they are participating in the ritual. They become performance videos. And those videos are both artifacts, you know, of the performance and of the craft process. And when I say craft process, I include performing laboratory protocols as well. There's a certain craft to that. So, you know, the performance becomes this didactic sort of enactment of process. So it's not what you would typically think of as a performance-based practice, maybe.
There is a large cross-section of the sciences and the creative mediums in your work. You often use creative mediums to present your scientific research, and you use scientific approaches to address creative ideas. So how are both science and the arts important to you, and how would you argue that arts funding, or would you argue that arts funding and science fundings should be equal?
Oh, that's a loaded question, and that's a very political question. So I'm working often with scientific methodologies, not necessarily towards exclusively scientific outcomes. I'm working towards conceptual outcomes, cultural outcomes, and, you know, towards inspiring or engaging people in critical dialogue about the role of the sciences, about the ethical pitfalls or the ethical conversations that need to happen around new technologies. So, you know, specifically, I work in biotechnology, and that is both microbiology as well as cellular biology, and specifically tissue engineering. These fields are used industrially. And so, you know, as an artist, I want to have a conversation about what that means when these biotechnologies are scaled up to an industrial level. How do we think around those? How do we even begin to address the issues that can erupt if we don't have an understanding of the complex processes and implications, you know, of microbes and genetic modification and, you know, tissue engineering? So I'm exploring those things. Most of my funding is through the humanities, or it's arts funding. And that is, you know, simply because my accredited background is in the arts. So even though my PhD is a cross enrollment between two schools at the University of Western Australia, it's through the School of Design and it's through the School of Human Sciences. So it's both a design and a science PhD. Because my outcomes are not specifically focused on scientific outcomes that an industry can use, my funding comes from the arts. Now, do I believe that those should have equal importance? Yes, absolutely. And I believe that there should be a lot more conversations happening between artists and scientists, or between people working in the social sciences and the hard sciences. You know, because without those conversations, people who are trained in the hard sciences, you know, and I'm talking specifically about biology or physics, what have you, aren't often equipped to engage in really complex, critical, cultural discussions. So rather than serving as an artist who's just here to communicate scientific outcomes, I'm an artist who's here to use scientific methodologies to instigate complex conversations.
As an artist, I know that the overlap of the science and the arts are well received in the arts world. How is your work received from the science world?
It really depends on the scientist.
Yeah.
I have a lot of issues working through all of the bureaucracy around experimentation with unconventional materials, let's say. So I use a lot of body materials that come from my own body. And there are, you know, ethics, human research ethics approvals that need to be acquired, even if the only human I'm working with is myself. So these things become these protracted, problematic processes that are, you know, I'll say narrow-minded for lack of a better word, only because, like I mentioned before, people who are trained in the hard sciences aren't equipped to view the sciences through another lens, which is the lens I'm using. So what happens is that I become subject, you know, academically or institutionally to a lot of what I consider to be bureaucratic harassment. So these are bureaucratic processes that ultimately shouldn't even be necessary. But, you know, here we are. Now, when I'm working or collaborating one-on-one with a scientist, those scientists are often really curious, open-minded people. And, you know, they want to engage with experimentation through that different lens. So, you know, in that way, I've had really rich and rewarding experiences collaborating with other scientists. So, you know, it really depends.
And experimentation is really what science is. Let's just make that
exactly.
So the word ruderal refers to the plant species that are first to populate disturbed lands. Are there ways in that you see your work working off this premise or adding to the conversations about our environmental movement?
Yeah, very much so. You know, so I sort of have two streams for my experiments. One is where I'm in the laboratory in a biolab. And then the other one is where I'm using the landscape as a laboratory. And I do not see an ecology from a compartmentalized view. I think that's a very, you know, colonialist, capitalist perspective to see the ruderal maybe as just a plant species, because those plant species would not exist. They would not grow and thrive in any environment, including human wastelands, if they didn't have the microbial species there to support the nitrogen uptake that are required. So there are all sorts of symbiotic relationships that happen around the plants, you know, these ruderal species. So I work a lot with the other species that are sort of part of this interconnected web, mainly microbes. So I've gone into environments such as, you know, gold mine tailings and looked at which microbes might actually be able to thrive in this toxic waste. I've gone into other environments that are, you know, tree monocultures, for example, and looked at what species are able to thrive in this essentially human wasteland. So my concept of the ruderal is tied specifically to a geography that may be negatively impacted by human industrial practices and looking at, you know, not only the plant species that are there and thriving, but the entire ecosystem, you know, interconnected with and around those plant species, drawing, of course, on my scientific background in microbiology.
What else would you like to have a part of this conversation? What did I forget to ask?
So one of the things that I'm always, you know, hyper-cognizant of when I'm working in any ecology is, who are the first peoples of this environment? How can I understand the cultural implications for the indigenous communities that are either surrounding these devastated ecologies or trying to work within recuperation or bioremediation efforts of these ecologies, what are the stakes? You know, so I'm always in conversation with the local indigenous communities. And I feel that that is, you know, one of the most important aspects of my practice. And it's also one of the most politically charged and problematic aspects of the work that I do. And I often find myself kind of butting heads with the industry people who are around these areas, you know, whether it's governments, whether it's federal governments, provincial governments, or even just the academic community that has a stake, you know, in the projects, in these environments. There's always really interesting problematics that come up. And so I'm very committed to engaging with, you know, consulting with and including and respecting the indigenous communities of any environment that I'm working in, even if part of the feedback that I get from the elders or from collaborators is, don't do this project here.
Thank you for joining us, White Feather Hunter. You will be one of the guests for Rural Ecologies 2. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much.